just oh, it's nice to be preaching again. I feel like I haven't done this in a while. It's lovely. Right, let's start with the question then. To the person next to you, or to discuss in your own head, what was the best speech you ever heard? Off you go. Best. Churchill, a couple of Churchills, couple of votes for Churchill. Wow. When I was a kid, I got a book voucher for doing something at school, I can't remember what it was. And I spent my book voucher on speeches that changed the world. Fantastic book. Luther was in there, Gandhi, Mandela, the one you mentioned, Tony, I'm afraid, didn't quite make the cut to speeches that changed the world. It stuck with you. All of them. And right at the front, I can't remember if it was the first, I think Moses got in there as well, actually, but right at the front, in its entirety, was we printed our reading for today, the Sermon on the Mount. Because if we think about what the speeches that really changed the world, then this, the one that Cynthia read, is one of them, isn't it? And I feel a little bit of a fraud coming to speak about it, because I kind of think it'd probably be better if Cynthia just carried on reading, wouldn't it? Just hear Jesus's sermon. This week, you can't miss it, but it's election time, isn't it? It's election time, so. So we spend more time than we normally would listening to speeches. These people, important people, people who run parties, they kind of stand up and they give these speeches. And Jesus was born into a time that was quite divided, politically, socially, culturally, economically. He's brought up in this quite impoverished area, and there's all kinds of radical factions that live together in this kind of melting pot of first century Palestine that often boiled over into like legitimate violence. And Jesus is born into this, and there's often repression and anger, and there would have been a lot of people who would stand up in Jesus' day and give their own little speeches. They'd stand up and they'd gather the crowds together amongst them, and they'd say, "Here's what I think we should do in the country." A couple of people might listen to him. And then someone else would stand up here and say, "No, this is what we should do. We should rise up against the Romans. We'll overthrow them and we'll be a glorious nation again." And those feathers tended not to last very long in Jesus' day. And so for Jesus to stand up and give this kind of sermon, give this kind of talk, was not unusual. You've got people all the time standing up giving their tuppence worth of what they think they should do. And as I was reading this passage this week, I thought, that's quite appropriate for us today, isn't it? Because you've got, whatever, I'm not talking about politics this morning, but when it's election time, you can't help but hear everyone standing over here saying, "This is what we should do. I think we should do this with the country," and giving their tuppence worth. And then someone over here will stand up and say, "No, this is what we should do. We should do this, this, and this. Take it back to how it used to be." And Jesus stands in the middle. And he offers us his manifesto for living. If you watch any of the debates, people saying what they think they should happen to the country, I was reflecting on it this week that one of them, it literally makes no difference what they say. In that, let me explain what I mean. Whoever doesn't win, it honestly doesn't matter what they suggest, does it? And this isn't true, just politics, like, if the person, they say, "This is what I think should happen to the country, blah, 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 blah." If they don't win, that manifesto is not manifest. That their ideas never get to be tried out, do they? So it almost doesn't matter. Whoever ends up losing, they can have whatever ideas they like, but they never get to try them out. There's always a word becoming flesh. The question is, which word? There's always a set of ideas that are going to be tried out. The question is, which set of ideas? So in our lives, when we hear someone standing over here saying, "This is what I think you should do with your life," then we hear someone standing over here, "This is my manifesto for what we should do with our life or with our church or with our country or with our world, blah, 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 blah." And we hear Jesus in the middle saying, "Here is my manifesto for living. This is how I think we should live. This is how I think we should treat other humans. This is how we should live with integrity." The question isn't, will one of those words become flesh? The question isn't, will one of those manifestos be manifested? Because one of them always will be. The question is, which one? In our lives, we are always hearing what people have to say to us, over us, and for us. The question is, do we let what they say become who we are? Do we let that manifesto become manifest? Do we let the word become flesh?
And Jesus stands and says, "You've heard it was said this, but I tell you this. You heard it was said this, but I tell you this." There's a lot in the Sermon on the Mount. It's quite long in itself. If I just read the whole thing out, it'd probably be time to go and get a cup of tea. So I'm just going to, as I read it, there's a couple of themes I'm going to mention. There's a theme of inward wholeness that comes up time and time again. It came out in the passage that simply just read. A theme of inward wholeness. I've got a mate who is a very nice guy. He's a very nice guy. He's fairly generous and he's fairly kind and he's fairly timid and he's fairly encouraging. Until he gets on a football field. And honestly, I do not know what happens to that fella. It's like as soon as he crosses that white line, it's like this whole other side of him comes out. And he's horrible. Like, it's genuine. He's shouting at people. He's using language that would not be appropriate to be repeated this morning. And you think, where's this come from? Like, well, you're out of, just normally, you're like this, and then you cross the threshold of a foot, and suddenly, it's terrible. Got another. I know someone else who's a very generous man. And he has a very strong moral compass. And he puts in things in his own life that make sure he helps those that are less well off than himself and looks after, etc., etc. Until he gets to work. And because he works in a pretty high pressure situation, it's like, what's happened to you? Is suddenly, all of a sudden, those morals and stuff that, and the generosity and the decency that you had doesn't seem to count for much when he puts on the suit and walks into his office and the way he treats. We all know people like that, though. I'm sure I'm like that. I'm sure there's times that I act in one way and then when no one's looking, I act slightly differently. But we all hate hypocrisy, don't we? There's something about it that's just very ugly. It's the celebrity who talks about climate change and then jumps in their private jet. It's the person who talks about how we need to do something for the struggling workers. I mean, it's up the minimum wage or whatever it is, and then it turns out that they're running this dodgy business that no one knew about, that's like paying people pittance and all the rest of it. But there's something, when we read those stories, there's something that we really hate. I gave charity a book a few months ago and said, "This book is brilliant, it's fantastic, it's full of all kinds of wisdom, I got loads out of it, you're going to love it." Unfortunately, she then googled the author, and it turns out that the author got fired from his job for doing some pretty unsavoury things, and all of a sudden she won't read the book. Because even though the book's good, like, it's a helpful book, it says good stuff, but there's something about hypocrisy in us that we think, "No, I'm not going to read that." No. Jesus says, if you want to live beautifully, if you want to live this manifesto, then we can't be acting one way here and another way here. Jesus says, you've heard it was said, do not commit murder. But I'm saying, if you go around calling people racker, calling people fool, if you treat people like you're spitting on them, which is what that word means, racker, you fool, it's like you're spitting it. If you treat people like they're not worth living, you're going to live an ugly life. Your life is going to look like hell. Jesus said, you've heard it was said, don't commit adultery. But if you treat people like objects, your life is going to be like rubbish. And he means rubbish is the rubbish tip. We've talked about that before. Your life will be like Gehenna, where the fires never go out and the dogs never stop barking and the worm never stops eating. Your life will be rubbish. Because if we treat people like we don't want them to live, if we treat people like objects, we're not living a whole life. We're not living a life of integrity. There's a word in the Old Testament called Echad, E-C-H-A-D. Let's try it. Echad. Yeah, very good. You've passed 101 Hebrew. No, that's all I know, so well done. Something, this Echad word, it means like to be one, to be whole. It means to be one. Like, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one." Echad. It talks about in Genesis, before Babel, the people were one. Echad. The people had one language. It says in Chronicles, the hand of the Lord was also on Judah to give them one heart. Or the people responded with one voice. Are we living in a way that's whole?
If someone looks at all the different bits of your life, do they say they speak one language? They speak the same whether they're at the pub, they speak the same when they're with their family, they speak the same when they're at work. Is the way we act always the same? Jesus is saying it's all very well not murdering people, that's easy, but are you still treating people like they're rubbish the rest of the week? Because that's not going to cut it. It's not just about committing adultery, like messing up your marriage. It's about, are you treating people like they're objects? Will you look at people with lust in your eye? Is the way you're acting every single day the same? Jesus says, don't be those people who go into the temple and give in the offering and sound the trumpets while they're doing it. As though you want everyone to know that you're generous. I used to think, when you heard that passage, did everyone used to think that they like had travelling marching bands behind them? Like a little umpa band. To be like, I'm coming to the temple to give my offering. No one else had this image. No, no, it was just me. I just thought it was quite fun. They're like, maybe we should institute it here when we take the offering. They're like, if you put money in the offering, you're allowed to blow a little trumpet. No, okay. Apparently it's not that. Apparently it's like the way to stop people nicking money out of the offering in Jesus' day. They used to have like this cone shape, you can kind of imagine it. Yeah, yeah. So you used to come up to a point. So you could put money in, but you couldn't have people like slyly trying to take money out of it. So that's how they used to do it. And if you threw your money in at a certain angle, then it echoed because of the conical shape, because of the acoustics. And so if you wanted everyone to know that you were giving money to church, you used to throw it in, it's like, excuse me a second, you used to throw it in at such an angle, it would make this like reverberating noise. It'd be, look at me, look how good I am, look how generous I am that I'm giving to the temple. And that was called sounding the trumpet, because it looked a bit like a trumpet. Jesus says, when you go into the synagogue, don't, and you give, don't sound the trumpet. Don't make a big deal of it. Don't act in one way to make everyone think you're great, but leave the temple and act in a completely different outside. Are we going to live with Ihat? Are we going to be the same on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Saturday, and a Sunday? The bake-off's finished, which I'm very sad about. And my sermon analogies will now dry up from the bake-off. But the one thing they always do on bake-off, oh, and for our American friends who are here this morning, the bake-off is a wonderful reality show. It's honestly... Oh, wonderful. Oh, wait, sorry, I don't have to... It's so nice, isn't it? They're always so nice about each other. Like every episode, that what they do is they come... Let's say it's like... Bread Week, which is always a good week, isn't it? We love Bread Week. They always mess it up. Anyway, and then, well, they cut it, don't they? They cut it. And then the question is always, is it the same all the way through? Because they're like, ooh, it's a bit close at the bottom. Whatever that means. I don't understand bread. I just like eating it, but whatever. That's what they always say. They're a bit close at the bottom. We're like, oh, you've got too many raisins at the top, but not enough raisins at the bottom. And then they cry, because that's the most important thing in their life. They cut it. And then they see if it's the same all the way through. And in our lives, we get cut. You're going to get cut and bad things will happen. And the question is, are you the same all the way through? When you cut open and you see you at different parts of your life, are you the same all the way through? Are we speaking with one voice in our life? Are we speaking with Ihat? The true test of a man's character is what he does when no one is watching, said John Wooden. And as Jesus put it, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others, to be seen by them. If you do, you'll have no reward from your Father. When you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honoured by others. They've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. So your giving may be in secret, then your Father who sees what you do will reward you. Do we live the same when no one is looking? Do we use the same language with tea and biscuits when the service is finished as we do on the A12? Are we living in Ihat? Do we speak with one voice? When we are cut open, do we look the same all the way through? It's election time. Well, we have people standing over here with their opinions and people standing over here with different ones. And the distance between them is amplified and the divisions extenuated and people get angrier and angrier. In Christ, there is no slave nor free, man nor woman, Jew nor Gentile. Because we come together with Jesus as our focus. Are we living whole? Are we living whole? Because there's always a word that becomes flesh. Someone speaking over you and that will come to fruition. The question is, which word? Will it be Jesus's? Will it be Jesus's? because it's his manifesto that I want to be manifest. Let's pray, then you're going to finish. God, we're sorry for the times that we are hypocrites. When we say one thing and act another way. We're sorry for the times that we've been cut and we've not been the same all the way through. We're sorry for the times when we've wanted everyone to know about our good deeds while trying to hide the stuff we're less proud of. We're sorry for the times that we've spoken about others like they were nothing, when we've called them racket. We're sorry for the times that we've looked at people like they are objects to be used, not humans to be loved. We're sorry for the times that we've let other words become flesh, become manifest in our life. Jesus, we want to follow you. We want to live like you called us to live. Help us do it by your grace, we ask. Amen.
Charity's going to lead us in a final...